Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams, and now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Tuesday, May the 4th, 2021, 19 minutes past the hour. And we have got a great guest during our first hour here. Now, let me just read a press release, which was released yesterday. The U.S. Department of Education announced today, which would have been yesterday, that it has selected Richard Cordray as the Chief Operating Officer of Federal Student Aid. Cordray is the former director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the former Attorney General of Ohio. Federal Student Aid is responsible for managing the student financial assistance programs authorized under Title IV of the Higher Education Act of 1965, including grants, work study, and loans for students attending college or career school. So what a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones a many-time guest to this program. He ran for governor of Ohio, and as the press release states, he was attorney general of Ohio and director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. With a big congratulations this morning to Rich Cordray. Mr. Cordray, how are you?
I'm good, Scott. Good to talk to you this morning.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you. I saw this come off the wire yesterday, and what an exciting day it must have been.
Well, it was exciting, and ironically, or perhaps fittingly, we were just attending our son's graduation from college the day before, and you'll remember perhaps that I have twins, a daughter and a son, and our daughter will be graduating in 2 weeks, so very timely for me to start to work on issues of
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how did this all come about? Can you kind of take us through the process after President Biden was elected?
Sure. So President Biden formed a very large set of transition teams that dug into pretty much every area of the federal government and, you know, helped formulate recommendations to him for different policy measures and operational measures, as well as thinking about personnel to fill, you know, some of the many significant positions in the federal government. One of those, as you mentioned, is in the Department of Education, where, of course, President Biden appointed a new Secretary of Education. He, in turn, has made a judgment that on issues of higher education, he's going to appoint me as the head of Federal Student Aid, which, as you rightly described, is all of the assistance that is offered to young people and their families, country, so that they can access higher education, which, as you know, has become more and more a common credential for many Americans as we've moved farther into the 20th and now into the 21st.
When it came to this position, is this something that really appealed to you?
It did. You mentioned I was the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau under President Obama. In various areas of consumer finance, including mortgages, credit cards, loans and auto loans. And one of the areas where we were somewhat frustrated when I was the head of the CFPB was how to address some of the very significant challenges that we face in this country to finance higher education. And higher education broadly includes college and university, but also community college. It includes vocational programs, and it includes apprenticeship programs and all kinds of training that gets people ready and gets them suited to be able to enter the work world and be able to compete with the rest of the world.
When you slip into this position, what are the main things you would like to do?
Well, I'm slipping into it in less than an hour, so it's right upon me, Scott. Among the things that we're going to need to do, and there's some key moments here that occur within the next year. First of all, during the COVID pandemic, there was a decision made first by the Trump administration, then extended by the Biden administration to pause all student loan repayments in this country to give people a bit of relief as they were, you know, trying to manage their economic situation during the pandemic. And one of the things that's going to be necessary is to restart the student loan repayment program, which is a massive undertaking. There are numerous servicer contractors who manage accounts, and there's about $1.5 trillion, depending on who's doing the auditing and accounting for the program, that is owed and is due to be repaid. So that's going to be a big moment coming later this year. The current estimate is that will be sometime in September. Could change, but that's the current estimate. In addition, there's a big debate in this country right now over the student loan debt that is owed, how much of it is likely to be repaid, whether any of it should be forgiven. Some people are urging strongly that there should be a certain amount of student loan forgiveness, but there are budgetary implications to that, as well as effects on families all over this country, and that's going to be a very vigorous debate in the months and perhaps years ahead.
As you said, you will start this job here in under an hour. What does it feel like, first day just about to go into it?
Well, it feels very strange, Scott. I mean, we've never had a time in American history like the time we're living through right now. And to start a new job in Washington, D.C. today means something very strange, which is it means getting on the computer from my home in Grove City, Ohio, as, you know, we're still very pandemic conscious, and having a series of meetings over the computer through Zoom. And that is something that I'll have to get used to, and I think everybody in the department has had to get used to, and we have to make more of an effort to work together from a physical distance than has ever been true previously in the United States history. So that's a challenge of its own that is unique, and that will be something that I'll have to confront, as many others have had to confront over this past year.
Mm. Have you spoken with President Biden in any time leading up to the appointment to this position?
I spoke to President Biden only briefly when he came to Columbus recently, and had a chance to talk briefly with him as he was, you know, seeing the many people he saw during his visit here, which was on the stimulus legislation that he was pushing so hard and managed to get through in his first 100 days, a very significant achievement, helping restart the economy. But we did not at that time talk specifically about this position.
When it comes to programs to help students go to school, do you think those need to be expanded, kept where they are now, or decreased in any way?
Well, the decision whether to expand those programs, which right now are quite expansive in terms of eligibility for financing for higher education, and certainly in the United States, the financing of higher education is far more expansive than it is in most of the rest of the world. But, you know, in many ways, those are decisions for the Congress because they're budgeting decisions. They have to do with, you know, spending spending the money that is raised by federal taxes and federal federal revenue measures. But in terms of making sure that the program operates effectively and that people have equal and fair access to the benefits that are made available, and to make sure that those benefits are successful as much as possible, and that the higher education being delivered is of a high quality. You know, those are all issues that this position will be right in the middle of helping to figure out and helping to implement.
How important to you, you've worked in other branches of government, attorney general, consumer protection, how important is this position to you? Are you there?
Yeah, Scott, sorry, I lost you there for a moment.
Oh, no problem.
In terms of how important this is to me personally, look, I can say that I think my story is similar to that of many Americans, which is that for myself and my two brothers, access to higher education has made all the difference in life. It's opened up opportunities that we never would have had. In my case, I was lucky enough to win a scholarship to college, which meant not only that I could go, but that my younger brother would be able to go as well. And, you know, that's a life-changing event. In fact, go back one generation further, my father was the first in any of our families to go to college. And in his case, it was something of a fluke. My dad was legally blind, and when he finished high school, which was during the Depression, he was not able to find work for about a year after finishing high school. And his mother and father finally bit the bullet and decided they'd send him over to Ohio State to see if he could perhaps make a go of it there with his limited eyesight. And he did, and became a program administrator for the developmentally disabled. And through that, met my mother, and his life was changed, you know, dramatically. And that's what higher education has done for many, many Americans. And we want to make sure that the promise and the benefit of that is opened up widely to Americans, and that they aren't barred simply for lack of means from making as much as they can of themselves.
When we look at this as a whole, the pandemic and how it has affected higher education, what ways and what big challenges do you think we will face as people are getting vaccinated and we head into the upcoming fall?
You know, it's an interesting question, Scott. It's a fascinating question, really, because I can look at the experience that my children have had. Both of them were juniors in college when the pandemic hit. Both of them were sent home from college because at first, you know, the waves of the disease were high and unknown and unexpected, and they weren't sure how to handle any of that. Both of them ended up returning for their senior year and participating in college in person, although even there, life was very different because they participated in their classes typically over Zoom and over the computer rather than, you know, gathering in person. It made them have to be much more self-reliant in terms of getting their work done and managing themselves. And, you know, it certainly probably helped prepare them in many ways for the working world in ways that maybe college didn't always do for a lot of young people who came out of it not yet as matured as they might be. But I think that it has been a difficult time for both young people and for those teaching them. I think far more so in the primary and secondary schools, but certainly in higher education as well. Everybody's life was transformed by the pandemic, and everybody had to make adjustments to it and learn how to make those kinds of adjustments. And I think for many, that was not easy.
Mm. I want to read a little bit of the statement yesterday from the press release that came from, this was a quote from U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona. I am thrilled that Richard Cordray will be joining the Department of Education as the Chief Operating Officer of Federal Student Aid. It is critical that students and student loan borrowers can depend on the Department of Education for help paying for college, support in repaying loans, and strong oversight of post-secondary institutions. Rich, we hear the story all the time. I want to start college. I don't have enough grants or scholarships to pay for it, so I take out the loan. College is over. I finish it, and then I'm paying the loan off for the rest of my life. Is there any way this can be fixed?
Well, it's a difficult set of issues as you lay it out quite accurately, I think, and it goes to a number of sub-issues. One is the cost of higher education itself. Certainly, it's a pricey proposition to have the wherewithal, both the human beings and the know-how, and also the programs, the facilities, and everything else that goes into making an institution of higher education work. And then secondly is how do people finance that? And it is an enormous challenge for many families and many young people, some of whom are actually on their own by that time in their life, and many others of whom have only limited means to draw on from their families, who may not have much in the way of savings. And therefore, the proposition of how to finance higher education is a real challenge. And as I mentioned a bit ago, in the rest of the world, it's handled differently than it is in the United States. There is much more limited financing made available to get people into, young people into higher education. There are many fewer people who attend college, and that in itself becomes a limiting factor for the society. There's much good work available to people who do not attend college, no question about that. And I hope there always will be, but certainly things have changed in the last several generations in the United States, and for more young people, they are looking to go to college, they are trying to access it, and they understand that the society, our country, has made a commitment to try to do what it can to finance higher education for young people who are willing to work and to make good at it, and that it can be a very important impetus in their future lives.
When a lot of people think about government and government intervention in a program or laws or changes or rules that happen, they feel at the federal level that it takes a long time to affect change. Is that more reality, or do you think things that you can do starting today can be implemented fairly quickly?
I think that it's fair to say that, to borrow an analogy, turning a ship is harder when the ship is larger. And certainly a program like funding higher education across the entire country, you know, thousands of schools and millions of young people, and some not so young, is a challenge of its own. And to make change in an area like that, I think, is difficult and takes real effort and real willingness on the part of the people involved. It's much easier to glide along with the status quo and much simpler to do what you already know to do and do it the way you have known how to do it. And to bring change into a situation like this is an immense challenge to turn that large ship, and many people have to be willing to pitch in to do that. It's not done by one person alone. But we are, from time to time, in a job like this, you're at a moment where there is an openness to change. I think there's an openness within the Congress on behalf of Republicans and Democrats to understanding that we're building up a huge amount of student loan debt in this country, that some of it is not repayable. Sorting through the issues of practicality and also the issues of fairness that are involved there for so many families and ultimately for our country as a whole and our economy is going to pose, tremendous challenge. It's, I think there's no sugarcoating that, but there's an opportunity here where I think a lot of people are expecting some new approaches and a rethink of some of the ways we've been doing things for some time.
President Biden just passed his first 100-day mark, and early on, student loans for people who had already accrued student loan debt, it was brought up. That issue was brought up quite a bit. At one point, it was $10,000 of student loan forgiveness. Some people felt it should have been more. This is an issue, obviously, for the Congress and the Senate at this point. But what was your feeling on President Biden's student loan forgiveness of $10,000 to people who had already accrued it? And there's been more talk of this in recent days.
Well, I think one of the things you will find with President Biden, and he's definitely shown it over the first 100 days, is that he is open to understanding and meeting the moment in which he is serving as president, and he will not hesitate to take bold and significant action where he thinks it will make an important difference to the future of the people in this country. And he's had to do it with the COVID vaccine, which has been just an enormous undertaking, but they're proceeding well with that. He's had to do it with the economic fallout from the COVID situation, and he's well underway with his responses to that. Certainly, aid to higher education and student loan assistance is one of the areas where he's laid down a marker for insisting on progress to be made, and again, a rethinking of much of what's been done for a generation now. And that's certainly one of the issues that he's going to be taking up. And, you know, those people that he appoints, like myself, will be taking up in turn and exploring ways to do what we've been doing better, more effectively, more cost effectively, but also making sure that access to higher education is distributed fairly across this country, and the young people who are willing to make the effort and deeply desirous to take the chance on getting a higher education and whatever the future may bring with that, have the opportunity to do that as much as we can make it happen.
$10,000 is a lot of money to a lot of people, certainly here in Ohio. If $10,000 disappeared from their student loan debt that they already have, what kind of changes do you think that would make in their life?
So it depends very much on the person. You know, for some people with huge and significant student loan debts, although many of those people are people who have pursued not just bachelor's degrees, but also master's and doctoral degrees, it is just a small part, maybe, of the debt that they owe. For other people, $10,000 is the entirety of the debt they owe, and there's a lot of people who try higher education, Scott, who aren't able to make it through to a degree, and those people are left, you know, high and dry because they have borrowed money, they owe money, but they haven't necessarily got the benefits of the higher education that they were, you know, seeking, you know, in some cases so desperately. So, you know, it depends very much on the person what $10,000 would make, or $20,000, or $50,000, or any of the amounts that are being sort of thrown around in the debates in Washington today. You know, these are things that are going to have to be considered carefully in terms of what debt is repayable, and that depends very much on the circumstances of the people involved, and what debt is repayable from the standpoint of the budgetary needs and limitations of the federal government and the country. So again, these are, you know, hard debates, and we're going to have to dig into them fairly deeply. But this is a moment where that kind of digging is being demanded and expected of the people involved, and I'm honored to be brought into those discussions and to help shape the direction of this over the next period ahead.
on this particular subject, now you being in this department, what do you think would be the best possible way to get this done, the best possible solution here to this $10,000 idea?
Well, I would say that today I'd be starting a job, certainly not finishing that job. I have views on this, as many people do, and yet I'm open to hearing the views of others. Certainly members of Congress are going to have a significant say over this. The President Biden and leaders in his administration, including budget officials, are going to have say in this, and we're going to have to look very carefully. We're going to have to look at a lot of numbers and get a realistic sense of what is possible, what is the effect, how transformative is the effect of forgiving any debt at all or debt at different levels and to people in different circumstances. And it's going to be a very complex undertaking. But it's one that we need to move quickly on and not be paralyzed by the complexity. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why they were interested in having me in this position, is that I've been in the federal government before. We had to take action on a number of fronts at the CFPB, and we did that. And I think they're looking for action here, and they want me to be working with many people to help figure this out.
As you go in this morning, what is your thinking on this?
Well, my thinking is a number of things. I mean, first of all, when you start a new job, it's always hard to avoid, you know, personal reflections of, for myself, thinking about the role that higher education has played in my life and my family's life, and people I know and have worked with for, you know, many, many years here in Ohio, you know, people who have pursued higher education and people who have not. People who pursue different kinds of training and others who have not. And it's, you know, it's important to see these issues not just as sterile academic issues, but as matters that affect real lives and the trajectory of people's lives. Then in terms of, you know, what's going to be possible and what the different challenges are that are going to be presented, that's something I'm going to need to dig in. As I've done many times before, when I became the treasurer of Franklin County and had to administer programs, tax programs and financial programs that I was unfamiliar with, and then the treasurer of the state of Ohio, and then the attorney general of the state of Ohio, and then the director of the CFPB, you know, there's a learning curve. There's some time it takes to get used to the job and to really understand what is possible. To think that through and to listen and learn from a lot of people about what their thoughts are, and then to put together something and actually work and have the drive to get something done. And that's very much what I'd like to do here, but I'm not ready today to pronounce in some autocratic fashion what exactly that's going to be, because it's going to depend on a lot of other people and not only myself.
And we only have Mr. Cordray here for a few more minutes because he does.
Actually, I have a couple more minutes need to prepare for the workday.
Yep. Just two more questions here, and then we'll be along. What does this position mean to you at this point, starting in just a couple minutes?
It means that I'm going to be at the intersection of some very hard policy choices in the government that involve economics. And facts and figures, but at the same time have a very personal effect on the lives of human beings and families across this country. And that's something that I take very seriously, Scott, and I'll be trying hard to get it right and to listen to a lot of people and take their input and put that together into solutions and programs for addressing the issues we've discussed today.
And final question, how do you feel, and I understand it's just the first day, the U.S. Department of Education has been left by the prior administration, which left just a little more than 100 days ago?
Well, I'm not an expert on all the ways in which the transition from the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration has transpired. There's always ebbs and flows when you go from one administration to the next, whether it's you succeeding your predecessors or your successors succeeding you. They're going to have some different ideas, sometimes very different ideas, and they're going to have different ways of implementing those ideas. What I would say is that the Trump administration was open to debt forgiveness. They were open to debt relief during the pandemic. I think there was a very important recognition. I think there are things about these programs that can be done better, and we will, you know, see just how to do that and not be afraid of changing course as appropriate, and many people are calling on the Department of Education to do. You know, the important thing is to keep in mind the human effects of government policy, which is young people who are growing up today all over this country and looking toward their future and wondering about it, trying to figure out what's possible for them. Their parents, you know, often sitting at the kitchen table and trying to, you know, work with various figures and look at, you know, what seems sometimes to be hopeless decisions that they have to make, and to put them in a better position to succeed. I think that's the bottom line, and I think that's what all Americans would like to see, and then it's a matter of figuring out how best to do that.
Rich Cordray, the Chief Operating Officer of Federal Student Aid, begins that job in just about 10 minutes. I cannot thank you enough for joining us this morning on what is a very, very busy morning and has been a very busy 24 hours. Thank you, Mr. Cordray, and best of luck.
My great pleasure. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Scott, and with your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Rich Cordray, there you go. Headed to his new job as Chief Operating Officer of Federal Student Aid in just about 10 minutes. What a nice gesture that was for him to come on here prior to starting that job this morning. Very big job, to be sure. Does anybody have anything to say? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Student aid is a big issue in this country for anybody who has went to college, anybody who might be thinking of going to college, or anybody who has dreams in the future of going to college. It's become a big, you know, I'm not really sure when this became such a huge issue, the loans that people get. But it has seemed that these loans have hampered a lot of people's lifestyle because they do have to pay them back. And there are programs like deference and things like that that people can use, but they still hang there for the rest of your life. And I don't believe you can go bankrupt on a student loan. A lot of people get themselves sideways in a lot of issues, but I don't think you can go bankrupt on a student loan. So it's a tricky issue, to be honest with you. 51 and a half minutes past the hour. Does anybody have anything to say on this issue? 740-383-9944. Student loan aid. Big issue here. And it looks as if Mr. Cordray will be responsible for managing the student financial assistance programs authorized under Title IV of the Higher Education Act of 1965, including grants, work, study, and loans for students attending college and college career school. And so many people, do you remember, there was I would say the biggest turn in this probably happened in the 1980s. In the 1980s, there was a big push that everybody needed to go to college. Now, I don't think that push is still there. I don't think people, educators, feel that way any longer. I think they think some should go to college, but I don't think they push it as hard as they used to. Now, I could be wrong on this, but it seems to me more people go to vocational schools now than they used to. It seems like more people go right into their careers. You know, years ago, and this is a very interesting subject, years ago it was said to kids, and I'm going to say this is in the 80s, it was said that you have to go to college because all these manufacturing jobs are going to be gone. These factories are going to be closed. Every job's going to be taken by robots. You know, that was the idea. But, you know, that never really happened, or at least has not happened yet. As we sit here in 2021, right here in town, just about every factory, manufacturing factory, Whirlpool, Yachio, and a whole bunch of others, are looking for people, can't get enough people to work there. So that never really came to fruition for those kids who grew up in the 80s, that all these factory jobs were going to be gone. A lot of them are still there, Honda, and I don't know if they'll be there forever or not, though, because yesterday I was reading this story. Now, did anybody read this story? That in the fall, I think it's the fall, that Kroger is going to start delivering groceries with drones. Did anybody see this article yesterday? Holy mackerel. Now, I understand that grocery stores are doing a lot more delivery business because of the pandemic. And clearly, Kroger is seeing this. But I don't understand how you deliver groceries with a drone. I really don't understand that. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of, do you remember a few years ago when, I think it was Domino's, wanted to use driverless cars to deliver pizzas? Now, this has probably been 3 years ago. And we talked about it on the air at the time. Driverless cars to deliver pizza. And I guess the idea was you would probably have to prepay before the car delivered your pizza. But I never understood this, because wouldn't you have to come out of your house to get the pizza? A lot of people don't want to do that in Ohio in the winter. You know, they don't want to come from their door to the driveway to get the pizza out of the driverless car. Now, that may be lazy, but that's true. And how would you know the driverless car is there? Do they text you? I mean, I guess they could do that. But what if you're an older person who just has a landline phone? Can the driverless car call you? And now here we are, 3 years later, and I don't think the driverless car thing ever happened. Maybe it did, but it certainly didn't happen a whole lot of places. But now here we are, Kroger wants to deliver groceries with drones. Now, I can't even imagine how that would work. First of all, are cities going to, does some legislation have to be passed to allow drones to be flying over the city and county? I mean, I don't know how far drones, I mean, they can go up quite a bit. I don't know how high they would have to fly to get over buildings, like the towers here in Marion or the courthouse. You know, some buildings are just taller than others. And is somebody at the store going to have to control the drone? And does the drone just land on your porch and drop your groceries and then leave? And how much weight can a drone support? You know, gallons of milk and meat and things of that nature are kind of heavy. I don't know. It just seemed like an odd story to me. Did anybody see this story? Does anybody have an opinion on drones delivering your groceries? See, they must not like paying these people to do this. They must have decided that we need to go another route. So why not buy drones if everybody wants their groceries delivered? Have people gotten into this grocery delivery? You know, the pandemic is, it's been there for a while, the delivering of groceries. But it certainly seems like it's become more prevalent since the pandemic. is this something you think will not go away? Because this seems like another area where we're getting rid of being able to socialize with each other. We're not going to go to the grocery store and talk to each other. We're all just going to have our groceries delivered, and we're not even going to have them delivered by people. We're going to have drones delivering our groceries. Does this seem like a good idea to people? Give me a buzz here. We got a few minutes left in this hour. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. What do you make of this story? And I'm sure that Marion, Ohio is not going to be one of the test pilot programs for this drone delivering grocery bit. But who knows if it works well? I'm sure it could end up here. But this just seems like one of those ideas that seems like a good idea at the time, like driverless pizza cars. You know, it seems like a good idea, but when you actually put the rubber to the road, when the idea actually meets reality, it may not be such a good idea. Does anybody understand things about drones? And how this would even work? I mean, how many drones could you have up flying around at one time in a particular city? Because you know, if one grocery store does this and it works well, then the other grocery stores are going to jump on as well. And what would happen if your drone gave out? I mean, I've heard of drones. Now, drones are usually used, it seems like, in a different way now. Certainly not delivering groceries. We've heard about them being used by the government, and I think we've heard about them being used in a lot of photography situations, and a lot of people use them for fun. They are a lot of fun, from what I have heard. But delivering groceries? Do you want a drone showing up at your house to deliver your groceries? Now, again, would it just text you when your groceries are dropped off on your porch? It's fascinating to me the way things are headed in this country. Somebody's got to have some opinion on this in the next minute or so before we go to break here. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz this morning. What do you make of this whole drone thing? And did anybody see the article yesterday but me that Kroger might be getting into the business of delivering groceries using drones? I don't know. 740-383-9944. You know what? We're going to go to break here. We've got a whole nother hour this morning. Stay tuned. We'll be back. 3 minutes left in 25 days. You have a big birthday coming up on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
My goodness. I can't even believe 95, that's amazing.
Yeah,